for somebody to pay attention.
Come back. Don't leave me here like this.
That's it, right there. Yeah. You're gonna make me cry. Come back.
Just come back. Take me with you.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. Listen, that is shit. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty clear what happened. Dad leaves at 6 months. You never, ever meet him again.
No.
Your mom remarries shotgun style in terms of you didn't get to meet the stepdad. And in fact, he was kept away. And that created all this fear and this rejection for you. And then all of a sudden he enters the house. And it's a totally different dynamic. And your mother basically disappears because she's now with the stepdad.
Totally.
And then your grandmother, who is your rock, who raised you with your mom once your dad left, moves across the country to Colorado. And here you are 8 years alone, and you start drinking with friends.
Totally.
So how does this story roll forward?
So I end up moving to Colorado.
How old were you?
I was 18. I started as like a manager at a Target store. I was like a front end manager. And then I moved to like, you know, clothing retail. And then eventually I start college 2 years after I get there. Drinking is crescendoing at this point. We are stepping it up. We are going full bore.
How much would you drink a day?
Let's go with 9 drinks a day.
Like mixed drinks?
The gay bar drinks. Yeah.
What are those?
Strong as hell. We are out.
Wait, when did you come out?
Oh, I came out at 16.
Okay.
I was still in the house.
And what was your mom and stepdad's reaction?
I had the most gossamer, beautiful coming out story. I mean, mom made
Let's
one.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I had met my first boyfriend online back in the AOL chat room days. Christmas time was coming up, and I was like, I'm going to get him a DVD player. And so I had my mom take me to Best Buy and help me. Like, she asked her to front me for this DVD player, the brand new technology. And she just questions me. She's like, what's your relationship like with Adam? And I was like, yeah, I'm gay. And the next line out of her mouth was, well, I guess I'm not having any grandchildren. So that was like, oh, let's make this about you. 2 middle fingers in the air, snap up my room. About 45 minutes later, I get, like, the knock on my door, and, like, reconciliation starts right then. And
what did she say?
She apologized. She realized, I think, the error of that statement, and that through all of this shit, Mel, there's still a lot of love in this house. There is a lot of love.
And so tell me more about the drinking. Was there a tipping point?
Yes, absolutely.
What
so,
was it?
We're in Denver. I'm living in Denver. I'm almost through college. All of a sudden, one night, I am feeling like I'm going to die. I have, like, this wave of, like, holy fuck. What the fuck? What's going on? Holy shit. And later learning, this is what a panic attack looks like. I didn't know. I thought it was dead. I thought the walls were caving in.
Were you plowed at the time, or was this
Okay. Girl, I was fucked up.
So when you lived in Denver, you were drunk 7 nights a week.
I was bartending at this point. I was bar attending, and we were just out there having the time of our life. We were doing it.
What was the tipping point?
I was freaking the fuck out, like, regularly. And so now it becomes a point where panic attacks start becoming regular. And now we're doing this fun little game where we wake up, we have a panic attack, so we start drinking in the morning. And then we go in for our meeting I'm doing outside sales at this point, and, oh, now you're out in the field. Oh, girl, stop at the liquor store, grab a little airplane bottle, this will calm you down. And then we do that. Then we go have a couple meetings, sell some shit. Then, oh, guess what? 3:30, get your calls in, calls are done, whoop, meet you at the bar, see you there. And then we go drunk. And then we wake up in the morning, and then we rebound anxiety. And all of a sudden, it's 7 days a week, and we're going down, and up, and down, and up. And it's just rebound anxiety to drunk, to balancing out the anxiety with the drinking, and then waking up from that drunk stupor with a fucking panic attack every morning. So much so, I can't even get out of bed. There's days I just call into work, just like, nope, nope, not doing it. Can't do it.
Wow.
Rough.
How the hell long did you survive that?
2 years in this cycle, in this pattern. And I hid it from everyone. It was just my thing. It was my beast to bear.
I can't believe you kept your job for as long as you did.
Oh, girl, I've been through 97 jobs. I have drank my way into getting fired out of pretty much every experience in my life. I have had some of the best jobs. I've had some horrible jobs, but I was an aide to a senator. I have done a lot of things. I have done many, many things. And continually in my goddamn life, fucking drinking had gotten in the way.
What is the thing that you are the most ashamed of that you did drunk?
I've alienated many friendships. I've manipulated my family. I've manipulated friends. I've said things to people back. When they tell me back the things I've said, I'm embarrassed. They didn't deserve some of this shit. This place that you can get to when you're an alcoholic, when you're drinking, where you just are in your zone. And I would just tear through life, not caring who I stepped on. Shit, I treated people like shit sometimes. I treated myself like shit. I'd eat like shit. I put on a ton of weight. People would call me fat and I would fucking agree with them. I started losing my hair and people would make comments on that. And I would just sit with it and I'd just be like, you are a fucking piece of shit. And I accepted it. That's the worst thing I ever did.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you get sober?
Well, all of a sudden my life was just, it was so hard to maintain my drinking relationship, my anxiety relationship, my primary job and my secondary job. At this point, I was pretty much drinking 24/7. There was barely a time I was sober during my day. I was at a place where I was throwing up straight vodka. I didn't even need the glass that it came in. I could just drink it right out of the bottle, right next to my bed. And I'm sitting in my room, and I'm just looking, and I'm like laying at the front of the bed, almost fetal. And I'm like, this is fucked up, girl. You are fucking worth more than this. So let's talk about ways out. And I was able to break it down to there's 4 ways out. I'm in jail because I hit someone with my car. I'm dead. I continue going until something else horrible happened. There's some unknown. Or you get sober. And I don't know who, what energy, spirit, God, whomever, someone clobbered me over the head that night. And they said, call somebody.
Who'd you call?
This girl Ingrid that I worked with, who I knew would not judge me, who I knew would take my text at 2 a.m. and say, could you please be here at 6? I need to go somewhere. She, without question, said, I'll be right there. Give me the address. She knew. Everyone knew. I don't know why. It was her. We were never close. It was a weak tie. We'd have nice times at work. It was great. She was very nice. We don't talk much anymore, but she was there. She was there when I needed her.
How did she make you feel? Like, what was it about her that made you call?
Before that night, she was like, Kyle, she's like, I worry about you. She's like, I love you. She would say like, you might want to make some changes. You know, she'd say things that were not of a judgmental nature, not of a overstepping her line. She didn't try and do it from an authoritarian standpoint. Well, I wasn't ready to hear any message like that at that point, but God damn it, if I didn't call her first when I knew it was time.
Tell me about that call.
Oh, fuck. It was like a Facebook message, I think. I just was like, I was sitting there, so like, with one eye open and barely able to see, I looked up a place and I found a place. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I said, well, this looks good. I researched this and I was like, hey, girl. I just messaged and I was like, this is done. I was like, I need help. I can't do this alone. And I said, I need you to take me there. And I said, I'm going to be drunk as fuck when you get here. I'm going to just drink tonight. I'm going to keep going. And just grab me. Just come in and get me if I'm not awake.
Do you remember her arriving?
I remember, kind of remember her being there. I remember in the car. She was just like, hey, how are you? Good. She's like, do you want to go to McDonald's or anything? Like, you ready? Like, let's do this. It's just like, she kept me, I'm like crying at this point. I'm like a mess. I'm like scared as fuck about what this looks like. Scared as fuck I'm gonna fail at this. Scared. Scared of the guy on the other side of drinking is gonna be the same fucking loser that I was as a child, that I felt in my mind. The same inadequate, not good enough, broken, massive piles of partial human that doesn't know how to be whole. We were quiet for a while, and we talked for a while, and we listened to music for a while. There was a little bit of a drive, and it was just me getting ready to start.
Wow. So who is the guy that you discovered when you got sober?
Jesus. Whew. Now? This guy's fucking cool. For a while. I'll say it. I have a good time right now. I have a great time now.
How long have you been sober?
March 5th will be 4 years. The detox program was horrible, but we made it through. I was literally Mel Robbins going in 5 minute increments. That was all I could do. All I could do was get through 5 minutes. And I would count, I'd pick a random number, and I'd say 43. 1, 2, 3, 4. I get to 43 and pick another number. 12. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I would do this, and all of a sudden I had 5 minutes. And then, girl, can you get through another 5? All right, let's go. Finally, 5 became 10. 10 to 15. 15 to 30, 30 to an hour to a day to a week. And we just build and build and build. And as this confidence came up, the panic attacks were still there, but I was able to, I was like, girl, you have 2 days sober. You can do this. Come on. Just breathe it out.
Where did the resolve come from to get sober? Like, what kept you going?
Things were so ugly and bad and traumatizing. And there's just a re-victimization every day and a reappearance of feelings of all kinds of things. There was an ugliness that resided over me that was self-imposed, that I knew I was better than. And I knew even then, there's somebody so awesome down here. He wants to come out and he wants to be here. He wants to help people. And you can't do that if you're fucked up yourself, girl. You can't do that if you're a drunk. You can't make others feel good about themselves when you don't feel good about you.
What have you learned about yourself now that you're sober?
I've learned what I can tolerate and what I will not tolerate. And I've also learned that I'm not afraid to say yes, and I'm not afraid to say no to all kinds of things in my life. I wasn't afraid to say, yes, I'm going to get this weight off of me. I lost 55 pounds. I wasn't afraid to say, yes, I'm going to spend all this money and become a realtor after I separated from my job. It's amazing. I have learned that I have a strength. I have a gift. I have an outgoing personality by nature, but I'm not afraid to use that. I'm not afraid to be and live in that and do this kind of good work and hopefully just help one more person. Getting it right actually means being okay with getting it wrong. I have this perfectionist in me, this kid who was left, this kid who was pulled himself out, this kid who needs things to just be right, just to be right, right now. But perfection, for me, is starting to look like the ugliness, the sadness, the fuckery of it all is okay. And it's part of who I am.
How old are you, Kyle?
I'll be 34 next week.
So what would the 34-year-old Kyle, like if you could go back into that scene in your life when you were 8 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
And your grandmother's leaving and this man you haven't met is about to come in. Coaching yourself. What would you tell yourself that none of the adults told you?
First of all, I give him a big hug because I love hugs. Secondly, I would just tell that guy, hey, man, it's going to suck. It's going to be some shit that you're going to see and you're going to do. But it doesn't have to be who you are forever. Just hang in there. Just love everybody. Love yourself. And know that you're good enough to get through it. And you deserve the good life you're going to have. And there's going to be a big party waiting for you when you get there.
No booze, though.
No. A big celebration. Let me clarify. I wish I had known that you can be, I accept the fact that I could live like an asshole for so long and then one day decide, nope, not cool anymore, not going to be that guy. And now I don't have to be an asshole anymore.
I can relate to that.
I've stopped therapy. I'm going to start back up. And we're going to finish. We're going to put to bed a couple of things.
What are the couple of things you need to put to bed?
You know, the anxiety stems from just this place of there were, you know, I don't want to call them hallucinations, but kind of like a place in my life where I felt like there were people looking down and judging me. And there's just this.
Of course there were. You were fucking drunk.
I wasn't fucking drunk.
They should have judged you.
Absolutely. But a sense where like people could see in and know like, almost like a thought police.
Here's what I actually think is the place for you to have a quantum leap.
Yeah.
And that is for you to write out every single person.
Yeah.
That you would be afraid to bump into.
Whoa.
Because real estate is a business where you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Driving a Lyft is a business where somebody can get into your car at random.
Yeah.
And you are walking around with the ghosts of the past.
Totally.
Unresolved. And I believe that until you actually learn the lessons that are in this chapter, the next one's not beginning. To the extent that there are people in your life that you are not comfortable seeing or being around or it would suck if you bumped into them. You owning your own transformation by reaching out. And look, you can write a one paragraph thing that says, as part of my recovery, I'm reaching out and apologizing to people. And I don't even remember what I did to you. I was so fucked up.
Wow.
But all I know is that in order for to be successful and happy, I need to apologize for whatever I may have done, and I need to say for myself that I have changed, that I am a different person, and that I hope if I ever bump into you, you greet me as a friend.
Holy shit, Mel.
And that is where your anxiety stems from.
Oh my God.
It's that the ghost of who you used to be is out in the psyches of other people. They're not reading your minds. You're holding a space where you're trying to make sure that you don't fucking bump into somebody.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're nail on the head.
And so I want you to make a list of every single person that you would feel any agita.
Yeah.
Bumping into. Okay.
Okay.
And then I want you to come up with a one paragraph just thing that's about you doing it for you. And basically just saying, as part of your healing, you're doing this. Because here's the thing that I see for you. I see a guy that if you can overcome the kind of shit show that you used to be and take control of your life in the way that you have, you can build any kind of business that you want. You can be judgment-free of yourself. You can be fucking happy. You can have a relationship where you're not in the relationship playing games because you're afraid somebody's leaving. But you're just fully yourself. What happened?
The love life is definitely a place that I still struggle.
Well, because you're not in it.
No, I'm not.
What would it look like for you to just be you in a relationship?
I don't know what that guy looks like. It's hard for me to like to let anyone fully in. And be pure and clear and honest and just let them see, to expose it all of the shit.
I think that the next chapter of your life doesn't begin until you are. And so I can guarantee you the anxiety will go away because your anxiety is all about managing unknown.
100%.
And the only unknown in your life right now is whether or not somebody from your past needs to be shown an apartment tomorrow.
You're not wrong, Mel.
Well, it's because I've lived with anxiety for 24 years, and I've made that list, and I've wronged a lot of people. And when you think you can just forgive yourself but not do that extra layer, because here's the thing, and this is true with relationships too, Kyle, and it's a really hard thing to understand. We spend so much time trying to manipulate other people into liking us, and we spend so much time in relationships giving people little pieces of information, but holding on to the gold. Are you in a romantic relationship right now?
No, not. I'm the closest I've been, but I'm not. We're not.
Okay, so what are you not? What are you holding on to?
First of all, it's terrifying to tell people I'm sober, especially, you know, it still is. It's still the fear of being rejected for a good choice.
Who the fuck cares?
I get it. I mean, talking about it objectively, it totally makes sense.
But see, you don't own the sobriety yet. You're not proud of it.
I am fucking proud of it.
Okay, then who the fuck cares? If you're with some ding dong that can't handle,
yeah,
the fact that you're sober,
he doesn't deserve to be happy.
Dude, it's on him.
Yeah.
If you're embarrassed or ashamed or managing sobriety because you're afraid of the reaction of some guy, then it's on you. You don't have a shot of meeting the one until you fully own who you are.
Yeah.
And realize that the right person for you to either date or be in a committed partnership has no issue with you being sober.
Yeah.
Right now, you have the issue. You have the story. And so this is the biggest breakthrough that you could have, which is truly owning what happens if you're sober. That's part of who you are.
Absolutely.
And so what are you thinking about right now as it relates to sobriety and dating and the bullshit that's there?
Yeah. Because I feel like I got on the defense early in these new relationships. And I'm like people are like, well, why are you sober? Why this?
But hold on.
Sorry.
Do you see how rattled you're getting?
Yeah, because it's something that I'm like, I'm pissed off about.
Why?
Because I shouldn't have to fucking defend my decisions.
Excuse me. Why are you, your whole body language just changed.
I'm sure it did.
This is the core of everything. Uncross your fucking arms. Whew. Nobody is attacking you.
It's totally vulnerable.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. In life, there's certain subjects, and your sobriety is one of them. So there's certain subjects for people where they get really hooked. One of them is sexual abuse. Another one might be divorce or, you know, kind of whether or not you have kids. Bankruptcy, and for you, it's sobriety. Yeah. You are so fucking hooked and angry that you're sober. And when the topic comes up, you can blow smoke out your ass and, you know, fart unicorns and rainbows about how amazing it is. But the truth is, there are days that you're pissed that you're sober.
Yeah, that's true.
The coolest thing about you is that you beat an addiction, that you survived, that you made a choice, that you make a choice every day that most fuckers are not strong enough to make. And instead of being proud of that and actually understanding that talking about it in a way that is responsible and proud and not like on a soapbox, that's your gift.
Yeah.
And in the one area where you want intimacy, you're acting like a douchebag about it.
Shit. Yeah. Wow. We got work to do.
What about the anger?
I will have to work.
Are you pissed that you're missing out on something? Like, what is the root of the anger?
Mel Robbins, there is a place in me, inside of me that says, why can't I do that too? Why am I not good enough to drink right now? Yeah, there's some anger. I guess there is some anger down there because I want to do all the things too. And it feels like a limit that's imposed. And I try and just create this space without limits, but this is something that, when unbridled, takes my life out of control. So it pisses me off that I have to put a limit on something.
You don't have to put a limit on sobriety.
That's true.
You're sober because you have to be. And the reason why, and this is the final lesson for you, anytime that the fuck you, fuck the world side of you comes out, you lose. And whenever the fuck you comes out, that is the old Kyle.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I really want you to get this around the sobriety, because you're not 100% proud of being sober. I'd rather have you be a little sad that it is what it is, and that you did enough partying for 10 lifetimes, and to own that realness. And it's fine every once in a while to be a little annoyed that it is what it is. But the fuck you piece never works. And you got really kind of prickly and nasty and snarky when you started describing how you felt when people that you're dating ask about sobriety.
Yeah.
And so there's a link between the button of not feeling good enough and feeling vulnerable and your immediate reaction being fuck you.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, Kyle, you want to be a seven-figure earner in real estate?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
You make this list and you will make that happen, because there will be nothing holding you back in business. Nothing. The other shit with real estate, you can do better than almost anybody I've ever met. You're outgoing, you're a talker, you hustle, you're a connector. That's all that real estate is. But if you can get rid of this teeny little bit of residue from your past, your business will explode because you will be free. The third thing is, in the current relationship, you got to bring your full self, and you got to remind yourself that when somebody reacts negatively, they judge you, or they leave, it's on them. The second you start manipulating this bullshit, you've manipulated them, you're responsible for how they react. And then finally, the piece that will really help you is thinking about the areas in your life where you still don't feel good enough, and realizing that you are susceptible to going from Kyle to fuck you. Let's come up with a name. Or Kyle the real estate mogul. Kyle the, like, happy millionaire. Kyle the, like, Kyle the difference maker. Kyle the sober something that is this next chapter. Who is that guy? Give me, like, a title.
A moniker?
Yeah.
I want to say Kyle the guide.
Kyle the guide. Okay, fabulous.
Kyle the guide.
Awesome. And what are your attributes? If somebody were to meet you and then leave, they'd go, wow, that Kyle is...
funny.
Yeah.
Kind.
Yep.
Inspiring.
Great.
Fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Successful.
Successful. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear a fuck you in there.
Where'd that go?
So Kyle the guide.
Kyle the guide.
Is the next chapter. Awesome is right.
Awesome.
Oh my God, you're amazing.
You're amazing.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mel. I'm going to do a first draft on my apology note. I'm going to start it today. I might not send it today, but I'm going to get ready to send.
There's no doubt in my mind that Kyle now feels respected and loved and ready to change too. It's so easy, isn't it, to get caught spinning your wheels when you try to change on your own? That's why I keep saying it's so much easier and more fun when we do it together. Because until Kyle had the insight that he was still fucking pissed about being sober, absolutely nothing was going to change. And there's no way he was going to gain that insight on his own. So takeaway number one, if you're somebody like Kyle that's trying hard, that's crossing the T's and dotting the I's, but you feel like you're just not making any headway. I guarantee you there is something you cannot see or that you are refusing to see. The other thing about Kyle that I want to point out, Kyle is a great example of someone who is very busy, but is busy spinning in circles. And you know, I've been like that in my past too. I think one of the reasons why people stay so busy is because if we have to slow down, we would be forced to deal with whatever pain is underneath the surface. So if you re-listen to the coaching segment with Kyle, and I encourage you to do it, I want you to pay attention to something. I want you to listen to the pace, even in his voice. Because whenever he slowed down, that's when the greatest moments of insight and emotion happened. So the obvious takeaway for all of us is that we need to slow down and tune in to the emotions that are in there. In order to see the problem, you're gonna have to slow down. And look, if you're scared of what you might find, you don't have to do it alone. Go talk to somebody. It'll be faster and a hell of a lot more fun. Now, the second takeaway, which is related, is something that I want to say about addiction. And that is that any single destructive habit that you have, it's also a mask for pain. We talked about this in Kim's episode. Remember, Kim had the trouble with smoking? And we discussed the fact that researchers now believe that addictions can be classified as habit dysfunctions. That just means patterns of behavior that have gone awry. And yes, it's true. And yes, there is a chemical component to addiction. But the real killer is the fact that you're self-soothing emotional pain. In Kyle's case, he used alcohol. Kim used cigarettes, and Jessie, she used food. Remember, she labeled herself as an emotional eater who was soothing herself with comfort food. And even after you break the physiological dependence of your addiction, if you haven't gotten to the root of the emotional pain that led you to the addiction in the first place, you're never going to break the underlying addiction. So while Kyle is sober, and that's incredible, and Kim is quitting, and that's incredible, and Jessie is taking responsibility for her health, that's incredible, the next level of healing and power is in dealing with the emotional pain that you're masking. It is going to be uncomfortable to deal with it, but it is the only way that you're going to truly heal. Now, the final and third takeaway is a tool that you can use to forgive yourself for the mistakes that you've made in your past. And that tool is to embrace and be proud of where you're at right now. You know, one of the things that you've learned in this episode listening to Kyle is that he hasn't embraced his sobriety. And by not embracing his sobriety, he is unable to get rid of the shame of his past. I mean, think about that for a minute. How could you possibly move beyond the mistakes that you've made in your past if you're not even proud and celebratory of how far you've come? And by being embarrassed and defensive of his sobriety, you know what he's doing? He's invalidating his own progress. That's why I told him he has to make a list of everybody he's incomplete with, and he's got to start the process of not only making amends, but also publicly acknowledging how far he's come now that he's sober. Look, the moment you take responsibility for your past, that's really important. But it is also essential that you take pride in how far you've come. You're only human, and you'll gain the freedom and control back in your life the second you start feeling proud of where you are.
When Mel Robbins told me to uncross my fucking arms, that was the Real Talk Express coming back. That was the same kind of thing my aunt did. I didn't even realize I was doing it. And she broke me down in a positive way. It was exactly what I needed. I felt the moment of breakthrough.
In this coaching session, you're going to meet a woman named Tara who's been looking for love for almost 40 years, and now that she's found it, she's about to screw it up.
My name is Tara Morris. I'm 42 years old. I'm originally from Marshfield, Massachusetts. I've lived all over the world, though. And I am a photographer and a yoga teacher and a world traveler and an entrepreneur. I'm here to talk to Mel, and I believe she's going to help me with my daddy issues.
Did you notice how she laughed when she said daddy issues? The fact is, the environment you grew up in, it can make or break your ability to be and stay in a loving relationship. And in this coaching session, you're going to learn that Tara grew up in an abusive and alcoholic home. And I'm telling you that as a trigger warning. And also because our conversation opens up with a very detailed description of her family's long history of abuse. And when you hear it, it'll make perfect sense why her dating history sounds like this.
God forbid you're a drunk guy that hits on me at a bar. I'll just literally, without even having my heart rate raise, I'll just slowly rip you apart and sort of get off on it. You know what I mean? Like bitchy, like a bitchy man hater. That sucks, you know?
I should also tell you, I know Tara. She's one of my favorite yoga instructors in the Boston area, and I wanted her on the show because she's struggling with something so many of us can relate to, and that's how our past can creep into our current relationships. Now, she just described herself as a bitchy man-hater, but please, please listen all the way to the end, because that's actually not the real problem. You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Asha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name's Liz. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall. The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit. Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick Ass with Mel Robbins.
Hey, Tara.
So I know you're here for advice about your relationship with your boyfriend. But you just said that you need help with daddy issues. So can you tell me why you think you have daddy issues? What's your family history?
So as I've gotten older, I understand it more now, so I can tell it to you that way. My grandmother married this guy named Leslie, who's my grandfather. My grandfather was cheating on my grandmother with the town tramp. When my grandmother was giving birth, his mistress was also giving birth to his kid. And the town tramp named the kid Leslie after my grandfather, who had a full-blown family. So my grandmother was all, fuck this, and moved them into rural New Hampshire in the 40s. And my grandfather resented her so much that every night of my mother's life, she was lined up against a wall and just right hooked, beaten, and then made to sit down and finish dinner, like choking back tears. And then she married my dad, who was run over by a train when he was 7 and is a nice enough guy, but he was blamed. His father was humiliated that he had a handicapped son and drank and smoked himself to death by the time my dad was 18. So there's that guy is my dad and that chick is my mom, right? So they meet and she's terrified of men and he's terrified of women because he has one leg since he was 7. And she's from a lineage of major abuse. And those are my parents, right? So my mother never had to say men are bad, da da da. I absorbed that shit. Right. And what I absorbed from my dad is this way of this deep self-hatred and self-loathing, even though he never told me he hated himself or that I should hate myself. It's this like this absorption of these two people, which makes me so fucking terrified to have a kid, because what's in me that's just like, my kid's just gonna sponge up, you know? And so the fear of men is bazillions of hours meditating and everything is just, when a guy likes me, I'm like, I feel like a caged animal. I feel like you're gonna take away all my friends and all my fun and you're gonna fucking knock me up and I'm not gonna be able to be an entrepreneur and I'm just gonna be like looking out a fucking suburban window like, with a baby, you know? And so the reaction of that, and then my dad's a drunk and all that, so I just get off like cutting men down. So like, 10 years on Match.com, I'd be like...
Oh, my God.
I was like, why aren't they calling back?
I'm surprised you're not a serial killer.
Thank you.
On Match.com.
Totally.
Looking for assholes to pick off.
Right? So, but I kind of was. I was like, I'll just fucking castrate him without my heart rate even rising. And just like... And God forbid you're a married man that hit on me. I would just... ruin you. I would just humiliate you in these like really subtle ways. And if you were a guy that was rich, I would just take you down with my words. You know, I was just like angry, just so angry, you know, and I still am. I just now I'm in a relationship. Right. And then this whole, now my mom's in her 30th year of Parkinson's and my dad's starting at noon with a Madras. And people are now coming to my mother's nursing home being like, yeah, I just saw your dad asleep at the wheel. You know, he's 80 years old and an active alcoholic. So it's like, there's a lot there, you know, there's a lot there. And I'm trying to deal with being in a relationship and being like whatever a woman should be, like, you know, like, hey, isn't he funny? You know, like, I can't do that. Like, I don't know. I just don't know what to really... I don't know how to be someone that's just like supports my man, you know? So I don't know if you know alcoholics, but that's just another way to say a full blown liar, right?
Do you remember the moment you realized the guy's he's a drunk?
Yeah, my mom hated him and she would talk shit openly about him. And so then our nighttime ritual where my mother got her ass kicked every night, we would hear my father beep his horn. And we would already be eating dinner. We didn't wait for him. And we would freeze, right? And then he would just come stumbling up and just glug, 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 glug the fucking vodka and just sit down. And we were just all, like, shaking and terrified. And then junior year in high school, I was a major overachiever, by the way. I was like...
So what would happen when he was beating up your mom? What would you do?
He's only hit her a couple times, but they would just fight. And then,
was it like, I'm not going to do anything to call attention to myself?
Yes.
Is it like, I'm hiding?
Terrified.
Like,
terrified. He would beat my sister. Not regularly, but she was the one that tried to disobey them. I remember vividly him holding her against the wall and just beating her, and my mother trying to fucking scream and kick and trying to get him off her. And I became a complete straight A student, did not eat one thing, a classic anorexic overachiever, and extremely depressed and got classed optimist, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the, I mean, it's...
Because you're a good liar.
Absolutely. And I am my dad's salesman, right? I'm my dad loses his leg. What is he going to do? Well, he can sit at a bar stool and he can make everybody laugh, right? He can't charm a woman because it's not like he went to Vietnam and lost his fucking leg. He tried to jump a train in the first grade and slipped under it, right? So I have my dad's like, da, 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 right? So that works great out there. At home, you know, I remember him banging against the walls in the hallway, against the wall of my room, and classic, every Saturday morning, he'd be like, going to the P.O., the post office. The motherfucker would never come home. He would never, he did his errands and then he went to the bar, which was fine by us, by the way. We couldn't stand him. Right? So then it was like, then what came first, the chicken or the egg? Everyone hating him at home or him never coming home? I don't know.
There's a lane in here about the fact that as a kid, you actually were never seen. That there wasn't an adult that came in and actually, and pulled you out of the situation. And there wasn't an adult that came in and got rid of your dad. And there wasn't an adult that came in and made him get sober or made the abuse stop. And there wasn't an adult that said, you're amazing and you're getting the A's and holy shit, you have anorexia, you need help. And so maybe what you're really starting to get to the root of is that for so long, people haven't seen the real you. It might not be coming at all from fear of men. It might be coming from a sense that nobody really fucking gets you and cares about you.
You know, when the adult not noticing that I was anorexic or saying that I was getting A's the adult we're talking about is my mom, right? Who I just naturally protect because she was sure the fuck better than him, right? But when I've had a therapist be like, what's up with your mom? And it's like I get so like, she was amazing. Why? you know what I mean? But like, she did her best and that's for sure. No one's saying she didn't, but like, seeing the way my friends parent their kids, that shit wouldn't go by them. I remember being like, Mom, what happens if I get pregnant? She goes, don't bother coming home. I'm like, good talk. Really good talk. Thanks.
What do you wish she would have said? What do you wish she would have done? Like, if you could go back and, here's the thing. I think you get like,
right,
about your mom because you, in the contrast with your drunken father, she's the angel. And at the same time, what happened was not okay. And she was not there. Meaning, maybe she couldn't be, maybe she was doing the best that she can, but that doesn't excuse the fact that it was not fucking okay. And what do you wish? Like, if you could go back and just separate the fact it's not a fucking judgment on her.
Mm.
It's an acknowledgement of what you needed from her.
Who, like, more of a friendship. Like, I know it's like you can't be your kid's friend, but you can kind of be, you know? And so I wish she was a little bit more like, hey, do you have a boyfriend? Or I remember my first boyfriend broke up with me and I was crying so, so hard. And she just walked by my door and goes, somebody better have died for all that crying. And that was it. I was uncontrollably sobbing. My very first heartbreak. I could draw you the scene. It was so traumatizing. And really, Mom? You're a fucking bitch.
The bigger issue that I suspect, you have gone so far around protecting your mother that you've never allowed yourself to say, what you fucking allowed to happen, Mom, is fucked up.
He just dragged the whole operation down and she let it happen.
There is some, yes,
yeah,
level in your own power, your own healing, your own ability to draw the line in the sand and actually have the life that you want instead of surviving the one that you had, as cheesy as that sounds, that is about allowing yourself to say, it's not fucking right. You should have left him. The fact that you chose him over us, it's not okay. And it left you with this anger. Like, I think more of the anger, it has less to do with your father and probably more to do with your mom. As much as you love her.
I think that's really right. She didn't have any money. So I think she thought she'd be homeless if she left him.
I'm sure she did.
Yeah, you know, so I feel like she felt trapped. She was a kid. She couldn't leave her family. Now she can't leave her fucking shitbag husband. And now she can't. Now she's trapped in her body.
You're the same way.
I know.
Where's the edgy and the bitchiness and the, I'm gonna literally rip your head off, the anger? Where is it still present in your life?
My relationship with Albie.
Why?
Cause I think he's crazy. And I resent him for being my man and having his shit and having his anger and...
Then why are you with him?
Cause I love him.
I know you love being with him, but why are you with him?
But I actually love him.
Okay.
No, I actually love him. Yeah.
Okay.
And I love being with him. I hate fighting with him. I'm not an easygoing person and neither is he. Right? So it's just not easy. And I think I wish it was. I wish he was just like a milquetoast guy, but then I kind of really don't.
No, you don't.
I know. I know.
Where the edge is working in your life, keep it. But where is it that you're not happy? Is it mostly in the drama with you and Albie?
Yeah.
So what is it about the relationship that's not working? Tell me what you guys fight about. Like, what's the dynamic issue?
Yeah. My contribution to it is these subtle ways I don't see with the tone, that is all based in, an emasculating, view of him, right? So I'm bossy, I'm bitchy, right? And he'll take it and I'll take it and I'll take it. And I don't even know if he puts it together, but then he'll outburst on, me snuggling with my dog too much.
Or is he pissed that you're showing the dog more affection than you show him?
That's what it is, yeah.
So it just, it sounds like you're not very loving.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
But I'm serious.
Yeah, I know. That's just not something that I could be like, totally good point. You know, like that's hard to hear.
But yeah. So.
Yeah,
you
no,
said
I'm not.
Earlier
I'm not,
that
I'm not, I'm not.
You're not gentle. You're not
yes.
loving. You're
yes.
not kind. I think you are to me.
Awesome.
Well, you said you're afraid of men.
No, that's 100% true, but Mel, I'm just sweating because it's true. So.
And
you're
and
not
you're
loving.
Little...
You're not kind. You're not gentle. Hot.
Yeah, seriously.
It's the worst.
Well,
you're
testing him. Let's see how much of an asshole I can be to you. And let's see if you're actually a good guy.
Yeah.
And he is clearly a nice guy if he's stuck around for...
Yeah.
So then he's a nice guy that you're continuing to poke. Are you still a nice guy or are you a fucking asshole? Come on. Come and get me. Fuck you. Let's see. Oh, you still love me? What's wrong with you? And so the line in the sand that we keep talking about, this next chapter, is you fundamentally reinventing how you are in your relationship with him. If you truly love him, which you do, and you want something very different than what you witnessed growing up, you have to shift how you are being. And that edge that works in the yoga studio and that edge that works in business and that edge that worked as, you know, a kid in an alcoholic household, it will not work in this relationship. And so the question then becomes, how do you actually shift it and who do you want to be?
I would have to act a little bit.
Yes.
I would have to try.
Yes.
Right? Like I do with everything and everybody.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I don't just walk around just like blurting shit out. I try to be nice to people.
Yes.
Right? And that's why I am.
And
you
he's
know.
Actually the most important person other than yourself to try to be nice to. Like his purpose, even though a therapist might tell you this, is not so you can work out the decades of shit that you have built up with your father and your anger of all men. It's actually to have a loving relationship. The first chapter was kill all men.
Check.
This next chapter is what?
Love.
Yes.
Him. One man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, Chris and I have been together for 21 years.
Amazing.
Well, it is amazing. And Chris will tell you that I am the biggest pain in the ass to live with, that there are so many things that I do that are irritating. There are aspects of my personality that are super grating. And that if he were to be in this relationship looking for reasons to not like me, he would find hundreds of them all day long. The same is true with Chris. We have very different communication styles. He's a thinker, I'm a talker. He likes to process things in a methodical way. I am full of anxiety, so I'm like, decision, 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 decision. I think it's worked because I'll make 115 decisions in an hour, and Chris will have thought through them, and we end up making the same one by the end.
Totally. Same with Albie and I.
But it drives me bananas that he thinks that way. So when you're somebody that has survived a lot, when you're somebody that's driven, when you're somebody that is a manipulator and a liar and a games person like I am and like you are, you get addicted to being right about things because it gives you control. And I could have single-handedly destroyed my relationship with Chris by focusing on the fact that I'm right about everything. I'm right about how you should think. I'm right about what we should have for dinner. I'm right about everything. And it wasn't until I made a decision that it actually wasn't giving me what I wanted. Like I am in this relationship with this remarkable guy who's not perfect, but I love him, and I am destroying this. Because all I can focus on is the shit that irritates me, or being right, or it's my way. Just because. And I had to make a decision, just like you have to make a decision. Line in the sand. The way that this was the insight. I realized that what made me very successful as a trial lawyer was destroying my marriage.
How?
Oh, well, when I'm in a courtroom, all you do is argue. And you're right. And you grandstand. And, you know, you say whatever you need to say. And it's all about you, and you're in control, and you interrogate people, and you argue, and that's what you do in a courtroom, and I was very, very good at it. But when I walked through the front door of our apartment, being a lawyer was not going to give me the relationship that I wanted. And so being the man killer is not going to give you the relationship that you want. And so there's a way in which you have a mindset as a yogi, where you intentionally try to have a certain nature and a certain point of view, correct?
Yes.
What is it?
As a yogi,
yeah.
There's a few, but one is a sense of sameness and togetherness and you know, that we're all the same, that we're all in this together. Another one is loving kindness. I mean, there's a bunch. When I'm teaching yoga, I am the best version of myself.
Correct.
I mean, that's why my eyes are shut, is I have to just go deep to everything I've read and everything I know, and not be like, traffic was terrible today.
You know, dog.
Right. I have to like excavate it up, you know, because these people deserve that, you know? And so that's what I try to do.
Albie deserves it. And so I think, what would be different about how you are in your relationship with Albie if when you walked in the door, the yoga teacher showed up?
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking of like all these little things, like going to bed early without him. I don't really give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
When I really think about it, it's mean. He hates that. I am realizing that the reason we get along for 2 weeks and then have a big blowout is like, is it whatever I'm doing is building up. I mean, he's got to fix himself, but that's not my problem. I have these parts of my mother, right? That
you're mean, like
yes,
your mother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's really hard to hear, and it's really hard to agree with, because I immediately want to be like, I just bought the motherfucker a MacBook Pro. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just like Cruella
but
DeVille.
You know what? Hold on. If you're anything like me, you bought it not only because part of you loves him and wants to give a great gift, but because then that guy owes you something. Just the way
that's
that
deep.
You said it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the thing, and this is such an incredibly powerful insight, that when you embrace the fact